Thank you, everyone, for joining us for the Desjardins conference, annual conference. Unfortunately, and given the situation that we are all going through, we had to move the presentations and the conference to be on a virtual basis. My name is Meir Yagi, analyst at TMT at Desjardins. I'm very happy to have with me today Patrice Ouimet, CFO of Cogeco Cable. And just to before we begin, and this is something important that you have to consider, knowing that Cogeco's second quarter ended on February 29th, with results expected to come out on April 7th. As a result, our discussion today is going to be less, you know, affected by or looking at the quarterly results per se. We're going to try to look forward and look at the medium long term and keep our questions on that trajectory, given that Cogeco is in a quiet period right now. Thank you very much, Patrice, for coming on our conference. And I know you guys are having to deal with the whole situation with the virus and COVID-19. Can you... Maybe I'll start with this question, and I think we can't not discuss this. Can you talk about how the situation with the virus is impacting your business, you know, business continuity, customer service, and potentially impact, if any, on results?
Great. So, hi, everyone. Thanks for having me. So, we're fairly busy, actually, in our management of the situation. But we have been for a couple of weeks now, so that's good news. We're a bit fortunate in North America to have seen this coming before. If we were in Asia or Europe, I think things happened a lot quicker. So it gave us some time to get organized and do it. First of all, in our networks, the way we organize our networks is that we have to provision capacity for peak time, and peak time normally is at night during the weekdays. So what's happening now is a lot of people at home, and now the peak time is throughout the day, but it does not create a big issue for us because we're already provisioned for that peak, which was already happening at night. We did make a few investments here and there to reinforce capacity in certain areas, but it was not something major. In terms of procedures, so we've very happy with the way it's been going. It's very surprising what we've been able to do in such a short period of time. So most of our employees are working from home. The ones that are that can easily do it, people like me, The tougher part was with our call centers, so we're almost done. We should be done at the end of this week, but we've already moved a significant amount of number of employees to work from home and do take orders and get access to the same system. So that was a big job. And our technicians also, we have special rules basically for house visits in terms of obviously, hand cleaning, and so the usual, you know. But obviously, we're visiting customers' houses, so the way we do it is important. And we're trying to more troubleshoot remotely. Even we were doing it before, but we're trying to do more than even more than before, and minimize the number of house visits if we don't need to go. It's also true for our distribution centers. So we're trying to do our user technicians wisely and have them work more from home than being redirected towards the main office all the time. In terms of our radio operations as well, we're in our other company, this is not a small task because it's really meant to be operated in studios, but we've been able to do a lot. And again, by the end of this week, we'll be in steady state with most people working from home. And the anchors in the studios, it's going to be a mix of in studios and from home. So kudos to our employees. I must say a few weeks ago or even 2 weeks ago, the task was really in front of us. in terms of making the operations operational changes, and now I can say that we're towards the end of it, of the big conversion from office to home. In terms of financial impact, this is something we're looking at right now. Obviously, we're fortunately less touched than some other industries, so that is that's a good news. But there is there's probably going to be some impacts in different places. I don't think we're going to end up with very large impacts financially, but this is something we're looking at right now, like any operator. We're planning to report more information on this when we report in Q2, but at a high level, I'm not too worried. It's a bit, despite everything we're doing, it's life as usual. We're keeping our customers up and running, and the machine is going.
Well, you guys seem to be on top of things very quickly, you know, very nicely. You've touched on many of the aspects of the situation. The only aspect I guess we didn't touch on is liquidity, access to funds, etc. You have a very cash flow positive business in general. Any risk from a liquidity perspective?
Yeah, so we have an unused facility in Canada of $1 billion, so that's the ample liquidity. Now I know some in your question also is probably if ever the revolver was difficult to access, we're in a fortunate position that we had excess cash on hand that we're not that was not used to repay debt, as we have some debts that have make holes that are just too expensive to repay. So we have about $400 million of cash on hand in Canada, so that's a good situation. We have cash on hand in the U.S. as well, which is not as large, but again, part of the, although we have two facilities, we're still doing the treasury at the more global level for the company.
Great. Okay. Well, I think that's good for us here. I think we also need to look at the business and, you know, hopefully after we pass through these tough times, you know, I think the rest of the presentation here, we're going to focus on your business. And, you know, I'll start maybe with on the wireless side. We've seen the CRTC hearings, 2 weeks of hearings you guys presented. You know, what kind of feedback have you gotten, if any, from those presentations and discussions so far? And you still have confidence, or you still have a expectation that maybe the CRTC will open the market for MVNO access on wireless?
Sure. So in terms of feedback, these hearings, the way they go is you present your case like everybody else, and then you wait for the feedback, the official feedback. So that will be later, and we don't control the timing on it. So we're still what we presented basically is that we think there's room for operators like us to enter the space, but the barriers to entry is because of the spectrum allocation, and that started many, many years ago, doesn't allow us to get in at this point. So we think we can play a role and develop a profitable business there. And as you know, our approach is a hybrid MNO. So several players are advocating that nobody else should get into this business, where some others are advocating that everybody can get into this business without necessarily investing any money in it or having skin in the game. So we're sort of the middle ground and saying there should be rules in place in terms of access to infrastructure or roaming rates, so that players like us that our operators can actually start the business there with a commitment to build as well over time. So that's why we call it a hybrid MNO. We think for us it's a good opportunity to launch a new product and get more of the share of wallet of our customers so they could actually stay with us. We have good brand reputation in the areas where we operate. some customers would benefit from having a fourth product with us. So that being said, if it did not work in the end, we still have a good business right now, but we see it as an opportunity to get into this business.
Okay. And 2 weeks or 3 weeks ago, you know, with the decision by or the recommendation by ICED for incumbents to reduce their prices by 25% over the following years, does it change your strategy or view with regards to the wireless opportunity?
Well, we're not too surprised with what came out of ICED. It's in sync with what was promised by during the elections with the Liberal Party. The focus has been more on lower packages. I don't know if I think I'll create the word, like a skinny package, like we saw in TV in the
past.
Yeah,
it did sound like that, yes.
Yeah. So that's one tranche of the population. There's a lot of people that don't want this. They want bigger packages. And we think there's room. So the key will be the CRTC. And the CRTC is independent from what ICED does as well. So it's for us, it doesn't really change anything at this point. And as you know, the rates have changed in the industry over the last couple of months. So we've heard that from other players as well. So it doesn't change our interest in the business, and we'll follow up closely what happens with the CRTC.
Okay, and my last question on the regulatory side, we've seen the 3.5 spectrum auction rules coming out as well. They created, unlike the previous auctions, a very small geographic footprints for each of the blocks that ICED wants to auction off. I think that's in line with what you were hoping to see. Do you intend to participate in the auction, and if so, in which areas, or maybe how important that decision to split the blocks into small geographic areas is for you guys?
Sure. So first of all, the way the auctions work is that once the rules are out, which is the case now, there's very, very little companies can do. Otherwise, you get disqualified from bidding. So I'm going to be, unfortunately, not answering your whole question. We're currently reviewing the technical aspects because it's there's a lot of technical aspects in the way the auction will work and the spectrum will work. In terms of the sizes, so yes, you're right that the past auctions were more in tier two are bigger territories than tier four that's been used now, and so that's good. What we did not like though is that we had advocated tier five, which is smaller than tier four, for the big urban centers like Toronto and Montreal, because it doesn't work really with density of population. It works with geographic reach. It still makes sizable urban centers in these tier fours rather than tier five. But it's better than a tier two in the past. Now, in terms of our intention or not, in which area, this is something I cannot comment on.
Okay, I understand. On the Canadian cable business, you had some trouble last year with the CRM operational aspect of things. Are you beginning to see a benefit on your cost side because of that and the marketing effectiveness from having it in place now?
Sure. For the ones on the phone, so we did replace 22 systems that were largely built in-house 2 decades ago with one. So it was a tough job, we're happy that we have it now. So that's the main system we use in Canada for order taking, which leads into provisioning. So basically, knowing who has to be serviced where and when, and also eventually billing. to this, we've attached other systems as well, and we could not do that with the previous patch of system, the 22 system. And we have more to come as well. And those additional systems are especially with better data on our customer profile, so we can better target our marketing, but also provide the better service for them. It also deals with preventive maintenance of our equipment. So I'd say we have started, so this is good. We have better information than we used to. We're able also to make changes in the system in terms of the packages or the promotions we give. It's a bit easier than it used to, but there's more to come, probably in the next 2 years, in terms of digitization, and that's a main platform for us to attach to it. And in terms of other benefits, is we were able to do an operational optimization program last year, which resulted in a run rate of about $14 million of savings. So that's behind us, and it's already in the numbers.
Okay. You talked about promotions, and that's a good segue to my following question. We saw you guys ramp up your bundling promotions after you have finished, deploying the CRM. Has slightly affected your pricing last quarter. Are you maintaining that strategy? And what's your, let's say, medium to long-term expectation for your Canadian cable business in terms of top line and maybe EBITDA growth at this point in
time? Sure. So you're right. So last quarter we reported, and a bit in the previous quarter as well, we had the push, especially more the three product bundle, and with more significant promotions. We have since then scaled it down. It's not just one promotion. It's a different set of promotions, and these things change every month. But we have decided to scale it down because you're right. It did produce a very good TSUs, but it degraded the ARPU. And it's always a fine balance between the two. So we were not happy with the mix we had last time, and it did impact the results. So we made some adjustments. Mind you, these adjustments, especially the promotions, will last for several months normally. So when we decide to give a certain package, usually if it's for a period of time, so let's say on average a year. So these things, every day we'll have some that will renew or expire. So it's just a trend. In terms of long term, I'll basically repeat what I've been saying for a few years is, so no change in sight at this point. It's low single-digit revenue growth in Canada, led by internet growth and commercial sales. And as I said on the last call that we made with investors, last time we reported, this year we expect that the growth will be mainly in the back end of the year, so especially in Q4. So this is just repeating what I said on the last call.
Okay, great. And have you seen any changes with regards to BCE's fiber deployment within your footprint over the last 3 to 6 months?
No, we haven't seen anything special. I would say it's still the competition with BCE and TELUS is about 40% DSL. That's where they have low internet speeds and satellite TV. About 25% fiber to the node and 35% fiber to the home. The fiber to the home is more prevalent in Quebec, because in Ontario a lot of our networks are buried, more expensive for competitors to rebuild. We have 120 megabits per second pretty much everywhere in Canada, and a gig in over 60% of our footprint. And last thing also is I would say is that the areas that are probably where you'll have a wealthier population usually our competitors will have either fiber to the home or fiber to the node. So we'll have already upgraded from DSL to fiber to the node. So if they decide to go to fiber to the home, it's less impactful than converting a DSL area to fiber to the home, because really what you're doing is you're increasing the top speed on the internet, but you already have a video product, which is not the case with DSL. So we expect that this will happen gradually over time, but we've been dealing with this for many years now.
Okay, so no big differences in competitive intensity, let's say, on technology in your areas. That's what you're saying, basically.
That's right.
Okay, and when it comes to you know, we saw Quebecor report results last week for their Q4, and they did see a bit of an increase in year-on-year decline in TV subscribers, trends in terms of year-on-year decline. Is that a Quebec issue, or that's also something you're seeing in Ontario?
I would venture, like, in our systems, I can't say that we've seen significant acceleration in cord cutting. So I would say at a high level, it's similar to what we've been seeing last year. It's possible that it's more an urban versus regional or rural area. So definitely if you service Montreal, and especially in MDUs, there's a greater risk of cord cutting than in areas where you have single-family homes with families, and especially also, or you have a population that's a bit older. So I would say for us, we haven't seen a major change at this point.
Okay, good to hear. Maybe I'll switch to the U.S. business. We still have a few minutes here. High level, what's your view on the same question I asked you about your Canadian business? What's your high-level view on organic growth profile of your U.S. business? And same thing, has the competitive environment changed, let's say, over the last 3 to 6 months?
Sure. So in the U.S., I would say in the medium term, we're seeing still mid-single-digit growth. And that's pretty much in line with the industry in the U.S., a lot of growth in data usage. So it's driven by HSI and also businesses. So the business segment is an area that typically we've been able to grow a lot in the past, and we're looking to grow in the future. And the last piece is Florida. So we're fortunate to operate in an area that's growing very fast. So we decided to invest more there over the past 2 years, so reaping the benefits on it. For this year, actually, what we said on the last call is that we would expect, and we'll give more color on the next call, but just repeating what I said last time, that we'd expect more growth in second half versus first half, as we spent more on marketing in first half, and we expect more political advertising revenue in the second half. In terms of competition, hasn't really changed, so we have a good position. So if you look outside Florida, Florida is a special case where there's many operators, so competitive, but a lot of growth as well. If you look outside this, we're about 82% DSL competition, which is a good position. There's certain areas that are being overbuilt at the margin, but that's something that has been the case for a year. And the Florida market, as I said, is competitive, but a lot of opportunities for growth there.
Okay. Can you provide? It's been a while since you made a large transaction or acquisition in the U.S. Your leverage is steadily coming down. What's the current state of the M&A market in the U.S.? Has it improved in terms of, it has improved for public companies in terms of valuation over the last few weeks, but on the private side, how is that related, or can we see an improvement on the private side when it comes to valuation, you think?
An improvement means cheaper, that's what you mean?
Sorry?
Improvement means a lower price?
Lower multiple, yes.
Yeah. This is all new, right? The market has moved just in the past 2 weeks. I would say until then, the valuations were robust. And just as a recap, we have about 45 companies that have over 10,000 customers in the U.S. that is on our list. It doesn't mean that they're for sale or we're going to like them if they come for sale. But it's a sizable universe we can look at, from small to big transactions. There's some transactions where we just did not end up in the final list because there were somebody else ready to pay a multiple we couldn't afford. We just couldn't make the math work for us. But there's some others where it works. We made a small transaction called Thames Valley in Connecticut, which was good for us and adjacent. So what's going to happen? I do expect until 3 weeks ago, I was saying to people, I expect 2020 to be more busy in terms of M&A, not necessarily for us, but for the industry. Maybe for us, it depends if we're there, but just as an opportunity to bid on something. Now, obviously, it could be the reverse, actually. And I would expect that some processes will just not launch until things stabilize. And we'll see where we are in 1 or 2 months. Some people need a lot of access to debt to finance these transactions. For us, it's less of an issue. We still raise debt, but it's not standalone, so we have a bigger operation. So it could be beneficial, but I think right now it's just probably going to put a hold on some transactions for a period of time.
Yeah, people have more basic requirements these days than a few weeks ago.
Or if you put something out and there was nobody bidding, it doesn't help you.
No, definitely. And in terms of, we talked about your preparedness for COVID-19 in Canada. Does that also apply, what you said in the beginning, to your U.S. operations?
Yes, it was a general comment, actually, on the two operations. They do, at a high level, the same thing. At different paces and in different centers have different timelines, but at a high level, my comment was for both.
Okay. So wrapping everything here, maybe we'll talk about capital priorities going forward between reinvestment, M&A, wireless, and buyback. Can you put them in order, and your CapEx budgets that you foresee maybe for the next couple of years? How do you see it going forward?
Sure. So it remains M&A being our top priority in terms of capital deployment, obviously if we can find the transactions. The second one is to make sure that we deliver the right products and we have the right networks with our customers. So that's working on the IPTV product. We're working on extending coverage of 1 gigabit. We're already at 90% in the U.S., but in Canada there's some ways to go. Pursuing the Florida expansion. And also there's some government programs right now in Canada to expand in rural areas, so that's something we're looking at. So that's number two. Number three is the mobile operation in Canada, if we're able to launch one. That's what we discussed initially. And lastly, we've been raising our dividends about 10% per year, so we never guarantee where it will be in the next few years, but we still have room to grow, and we have an NCIB in place as well. Given that we're below our long-term three turns of debt target. And I'm sorry, you had another question you mentioned?
In terms of your CapEx budgets going forward, if you can maybe give us a qualitative assessment for the next couple of years versus this year.
Yeah, so we've been running in Canada at an intensity of 18 to 19 or close to 20%, between 18 and 20%. That's probably a good place to be going forward. We're doing a lot of things to do, for example, self-installs,
which require and smaller boxes, which drives the CapEx down. But if we do get some of these government programs to expand in rural areas, that would increase it. But that's probably a good place to look at with potentially an ability to decrease it over time. And in the U.S., we've been running now below 20%, and the goal is to go below that. The drag there is the Florida expansion, which is good dollars to invest, but steady state would be a bit lower than in Canada because the ARPU is different in the U.S. So it's a similar spend, really, but as a percentage, because the ARPU is higher in the U.S., it looks smaller.
Okay, interesting. So towards the lower end of the 18 to 20% in the U.S. over time?
Yes.
Okay, great. I think this is good for us. We've already actually passed our maximum allotted time, but Patrice, thank you very much for coming on today and giving an update on your operations. It's trying times for everyone, but we really appreciate your presence with us today.
Great. Well, my pleasure, and thanks for organizing it in these difficult times. At least this is it's a good bridge between a physical meeting and nothing.
Stay healthy and for you and your family, and we'll talk soon. Thank you, everyone.
Great. Thank you.